This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 13th of March 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 13th of March, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful, standing in for Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week are City Hit by Virus, Village to Hear Festival Proposal, and topping out on new £35 million sports and leisure centre. So can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which was City Hit by Virus. More schools in the Winchester area have been forced to take action following coronavirus exposure fears, with two students testing positive for the virus. Peter Simmons College, Weston Church of England Primary School and Perrin School in Alsford are the latest to be affected by the outbreak. It comes as last week two pupils from Oliver's Battery Primary School were put into isolation after travelling in a taxi that had been used by a person with a confirmed diagnosis. On Sunday, a letter was sent to parents and pupils of Peter Simmons informing them that the college had been told by Public Health England, PHE, one of their students had been diagnosed with COVID-19. The student is now said to be isolating at home. The statement from Principal Sarah Russell continued, "The college is in discussion with and taking advice from Public Health England, who are contacting and giving guidance to those who have had close interaction with the student regarding self-isolation and what to do if symptoms develop. I understand parents may be worried, but following advice from the specialists at PHE, I am assured there is no need for the college to close." Following the announcement, students at the Owens College expressed little fear about the impact the diagnosis could have, with many continuing to attend classes this week. One student, Nadia Richards, said, "I'm not concerned about it. I don't think it's a big issue. It's not like we're just super old. We're not going to die. I think if someone has existing health issues, they shouldn't come in." Headteacher Steve Jones wrote, "We have been made aware by Public Health England, PHE, that one of our students has tested positive for coronavirus. Swift action has been taken to ensure the situation is being managed according to medical guidance, and the student is not in school and was not in school whilst showing symptoms. Experts from PHE have traced anyone who had close contact with the student during the infectious period to provide the appropriate health advice. Meanwhile, two pupils at Weston Church of England Primary School have been tested for coronavirus and fears have been raised as youngsters are arriving at the school in face masks. In a letter, headteacher Peter Burbridge said, "On advice given, I am writing to inform you that two members of the school community are being tested for coronavirus, COVID-19. I have been in contact with Public Health England, who have stated that if these students are being tested as possible cases, there is no indication for school closure or any other measures for staff or children. Parents continue to bring their children to school, with most saying they were not worried." Sarah Beck, whose daughter is asthmatic and attends the school, said, "They are not confirmed cases and the school has followed public health advice." The staff member at Southampton General Hospital added, "I think we have got to follow the guidance that Public Health England are telling people. They know what they're doing, so I'm not worried about it at the moment." One mother, who wished not to be named, said, "People are going to catch it one way or another. They, the children, have been asked not to talk about it at school as it's scaring some children."
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Norma.
Villagers to hear festival proposal. South Wanston residents will be able to meet the people behind a proposed music festival tonight, March the 13th. Suni Phoenix and his two friends, who are seeking Winchester City Council's permission to host a two-day event at Worthy Grove, will be attending a public meeting in the Village Hall from 7 p.m. The festival, called Hidden Wonderland, has reportedly caused the people in the area to fall out on social media, with opinions being divided. Mr. Phoenix was also declared bankrupt on November the 29th last year, which has raised the questions as to how he can afford to put on a festival. Commenting on the Hampshire Chronicle website, user WinchRes1 said, "Sunni has done a good job of getting the village all to fall out and be sarcastic and nasty on their village Facebook page, which was initially set up to look out for one another. He was liking all the positive comments and using the laughing emoji at any that were concerned. All got so nasty, residents were leaving the village, their village page, and the administrator eventually took the comments down. His website says tickets selling fast, and he said on Facebook that he has sold 4,950 tickets. With staff and freebies, he's over his 4,999 capacity, and he hasn't got his licence yet. Mr. Phoenix is yet to respond to the Chronicle's latest attempt to contact him, but previously said that he's absolutely dying to meet with a local resident. We have done our absolute best to speak with all the surrounding villages, and some of the support has been overwhelming," he added. "What we want people to realise is this is not boomtown. We've gone to huge extents to deal with the noise. We are nowhere near the village, are on a tiny site, and our sound systems will ensure nearby people won't hear anything. It's hard to convey things over the phone, so all three of us will be there. We encourage as many as possible to turn up. If approved, the festival licence will allow the live music and the consumption of alcohol on site from 11 a.m. on July the 10th to 2 a.m. the following morning, and from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. on the following day. It will have a max capacity of 4,999 and revellers have the option to camp."
Over to Andrew for the third headline story.
And on a slightly more positive note, this is talking about the topping out on the new £35 million sports and leisure centre. The new leisure centre in Winchester has reached a major milestone, as it steps closer to the proposed launch date in early 2021. Last week, councillors and project representatives took part in a topping out of the Winchester Sport and Leisure Park at Bar End. Spanning 9,900 square metres and using more than 760 tonnes of steel, more than 80,000 people hours have been worked on the scheme so far. A raft of environmental enhancements have been added in recent months, which will make the building amongst the most eco-friendly leisure centres in the UK. Features include 849 square metres of photovoltaic panels that will generate 156,350 kilowatts of green energy a year, heat recovery units, and an energy-efficient heating system. The site will feature new trees and electric charge points, whilst the centre will be served by improved walking and cycling routes. The new centre will boast a range of state-of-the-art features, including a 50-metre pool with a movable floor and boom to support many activities, a separate training pool, an 8-court sports hall, 4 squash courts, 200 gym stations, 2 large studios, and Top Rock, the indoor fun climbing. A hydrotherapy suite will be available. In recent months, the roof work has commenced and external cladding is being erected. The construction of the pools has been completed, and these are now being tested for water tightness. On-site technical apprentice, Alex Serazio, joined Winchester City Councillors and Wilmot Dixon to leave their mark, signing their names on a top-floor wall panel. Representatives from partners in the scheme were also present, including the County Council, University of Winchester, and the Pinder Trust. Councillor Lucille Thompson, City Council leader, said This is an exciting milestone in the delivery of Winchester District's fantastic new leisure park. The building is being constructed with exacting eco-credentials to ensure it meets the highest green standards possible. We have also been able to support 20 young apprentices to gain valuable skills. On completion in early 2021, we want this centre to inspire all of our residents to get active and enjoy its state-of-the-art facilities. And the article is accompanied by a couple of photographs. There's the aforementioned Alex Razzio, who's a technical apprenticeship, and he's signing his name along with lots of other people on one of the wall panels. And then there's a shot of Councillor Lucille Thompson, Alex again, and Chief Executive Laura Taylor and Richard Poulter standing inside the building and looking at the structure, and it all seems to be coming along extremely well.
And that concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue now with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. And this will be followed by announcements and what's on, and then items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Appleyard, Sir Leonard Vincent Appleyard, on the 7th of February. Chant, Queenie Florence Chant, peacefully, on the 29th of February, aged 91. Clements, Susan Clements, on the 24th of February, after a long battle with cancer. Cullen, Alan Muriel Cullen, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 98. Dennis, Dorothy Mary Dennis, peacefully on the 28th of February, aged 88. Hardman, Harold Hardman, peacefully on the 5th of March, aged 88. Honess, Keith Allen Honess, on the 8th of March, aged 89. Middleton, John Vincent Middleton, peacefully on the 29th of February, aged 93. And finally, Pittman, Michael Albert Lewis Pittman, peacefully on the 19th of February, aged 79. And now it's time for Christian comment, read by Nikki.
And it's headed Water and the Me-Centred Society. I discovered at the weekend that I am preaching on Sunday. Although one of the dates I offered, I had not heard back and so assumed I was not needed. Hastily, I looked up the readings and discovered the Old Testament was the story of the Israelites in the desert, desperate for water, and the Gospel was the story of the Samaritan woman meeting Jesus at the well when he asked her for a drink. Obvious theme there, I thought. And then I thought, the water of life. Water is, of course, very topical at the moment. Never-ending rain here, resulting in life-threatening floods, shortages in other parts of the world leading to catastrophic fires. And then there is the edict for more hand-washing to prevent the spread of coronavirus, COVID-19. I'm not sure if it has spread to countries with problems getting access to water or drought yet, but what are they going to do if it does? There is so much about our lives that we take for granted. I can understand the buying up of hand gels, and apparently they are even being stolen from hospitals, no thought being given to what would happen if they or their families needed admission. But why toilet rolls? The infection is respiratory, not gastrointestinal. Various psychologists have pontificated that this is what people do nowadays if they feel panic or profound anxiety. I have not actually seen this myself in my professional life as a psychiatrist. I did hear something about the inner cardboard rolls being made in China, but surely paper could be made available in different ways if this was really the case. This is in reality another reflection of our selfish, me-centred society. What about the elderly, the housebound, those with limited resources? Are we taking care of them? I read a suggestion that all churches should make lists of all the vulnerable people known to their congregations and should undertake to phone them every day to check they're okay. That would still leave some people not known or homeless, but that could be a challenge for this season of Lent to try and make contact and seek to help them as our country prepares for this infection to spread. Yes, I have moaned about all the wet dog towels, but at least I have the means to wash them. And on a lighter note, I've discovered a magic potion to remove hair from washing machines. So, yes, I will be preaching on the water of life on Sunday, but not just physical water that can help people, but the spiritual water that can give other sorts of enrichment and nourishment as we seek to help others, and that by Rosemary A. Baker.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. And now, if you want to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Six letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Norma.
This is entitled Lift the Mask, and it's by Karen Barrett. Sir, I agree with Khaled Aziz and Diane Abbott, it seems, about internet and anonymisation, Chronicle, March the 5th. I don't engage in social media, but a few years ago I commented on an article in the online edition of the paper and got a number of responses, one from an allegedly local bloke hiding behind a silly synonym. It wasn't abusive, but it struck me at the time that it could come from anybody, domiciled in the city or not, known to me or not, fellow footy fan, political polemists, binmen, bishops, just kidding, aforementioned categories. Please don't come after me, but seriously, who knows who posts? I decided a while back that it was a waste of time engaging in debate with gutless individuals who needed the version of Dutch courage bestowed by meaningless moniker to speak out and would presumably be struck dumb in a face-to-face. And that was from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
And this letter has been sent in by Andrew Beadle and is titled Tax Freezes. Sir, I read in the Chronicle, March the 5th, that the Conservative city councillors opposed Winchester Liberal Democrats' council tax increase, which was described as a Robin Hood story. A Band D council taxpayer is being required to pay an additional £4.17, or just over 1p per day, for city council services, whereas the same council taxpayer will have to pay an additional £49 to Conservative-controlled Hampshire County Council. It is true that the Conservatives froze the city council tax for 2 years when they were in control, but I am quite sure this freeze could not have been maintained, as I was told some time ago by a senior Conservative city councillor, there was a projected financial deficit that would need to be plugged. There was also opposition to the introduction of a flat parking charge on Sundays of £2, less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Other nearby councils charge on Sundays, so I do not think this charge is going to deter people coming into Winchester with all that it has to offer. And that's from Andrew Beadle of Millsdown Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And from Simon Lever, headed Station Approach. Sir, the Station Approach project would have a directly positive impact on Winchester, including new jobs and inward investment. What possible justification can there be in holding meetings in secret that affects our city? Chronicle, February 27. Open discussion and dialogue is the way forward, not a seemingly 1984 posture. To quote Laura Taylor, when the council is ready to make that decision, it will, of course, be communicated in the usual way. The quote intimates that a decision will already have been made without proper consultation. So far, due to procrastination, the project has lost a few million pounds grant, jobs, inward revenue, trust and credibility. I have always suggested that all parties should sit round a table and discuss a practical way forward. This cannot happen if there are secret meetings, especially with such a crucial project. There would seem to be an individual who has a disproportionate degree of influence based on instinctive negativity and a desire to interfere with projects that would be to the benefit of Winchester. I most certainly resonate with Ian Tate's letter, chronicled February 27, which addresses the same topic, and that from Simon Lieber, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
You washed your hands, did they? Sir, wash your hands and avoid touching your face. This is the official advice to avoid transmitting coronavirus, and good advice it is. But what about other people's hands and faces? Kissing on both cheeks and shaking hands with acquaintances are customs we have acquired relatively recently from the continent. In my childhood in the 1940s, country people did not usually greet each other that way. So let us, for the time, avoid skin contact altogether. Some of us are now adopting rather Hindu greeting called Namaste. This graceful gesture, increasingly familiar, is made by pressing your palms together vertically in front of you with a smile and a slight bow. And that was from Michael Arniston Nugas, Gambleton Lane, Sherfield English, Romsey.
And continuing on the theme of virus, yeah, and obviously this letter was written a few days ago, so it's a fast-moving situation. However, I'll read the letter from Philip Woodmore. Virus worries. Sir, I am concerned about the government's inadequate response to the coronavirus in the UK. While many countries are taking serious measures to try to contain this virus, the UK government is just sitting back, waiting to see what happens. If we do not act now, it will be too late, and we'll be in the same state as Italy in 2 weeks' time. We therefore should be putting the necessary measures to contain the virus from spreading now. And then there's a series of itemized items. No one should be allowed into the UK from northern Italy unless they are UK citizens, and then to be quarantined for 2 weeks. Secondly, no UK citizens to be allowed to visit northern Italy. Number three, no visa to be issued to anyone coming from a country infected by the coronavirus. Next, any UK citizens arriving from the infected countries to be quarantined for 2 weeks. Next, all visitors arriving in the UK should have their temperature taken at the airport. All sporting events and large gatherings to be banned or played behind closed doors. And finally, the over 70s and people with health issues to be advised to isolate if possible. The NHS will not cope, so the army should now be erecting a field hospital to take the infected patients. And if this government does not take the coronavirus seriously, then the over 60s, which I can say comes from most of your readers, and the people with health problems will be condemned to the slaughterhouse to die. And that's from Philip Woodmore, Hague Road, Basingstoke, Eastleigh.
I'm sorry, I'm just recovering from that. Okay, and from Diane Andrews, no to library cuts. Sir, many of your readers may not be aware that Hampshire County Library Service is currently consulting the public on cuts to the mandatory public library service because government grant funding from our taxes is not adequate for the council to provide the social care needed, especially by vulnerable older people, those with disabilities and children. Two options are proposed, to close 10 libraries or to reduce the opening hours across the board, which will probably lead to the closure of smaller branches. Both will result in staff cuts. However, the fact that libraries contribute greatly to the health and well-being to the population at large should be considered. As one of approximately 30 volunteers at the Tier 4 Community Library in Burselden, I ask county councillors to applaud the vision of the library service to enlarge the remit of libraries so that they become community hubs, but that they also recognise the value of the partnerships that could develop more widely and effectively between communities and the library service if its services were not withdrawn, as is proposed by the ending of support for the community libraries that are run solely by volunteers. From my observation, it is the preschool children who benefit most and would suffer most by this withdrawal of support to community libraries. Small children are not able to have Kindles or use the internet or drive or walk to an alternative library. The The very young ones come with their parents and take up to maximum picture books allowed, 30, on each visit. Think of what that would cost families on a weekly basis if they weren't borrowing. It is obvious that some young mothers use the library as a refuge and an outing, especially on wet days, and come for long stays. The village preschools visit regularly in crocodiles and have group tickets. Schools bring parties of children. The summer reading challenge enables many children to continue their reading in the summer holiday. All this promotes literacy, one of HCC's stated aims. Easy access to libraries within communities makes this possible. And that from Diane Andrews, Saltons Lane, Old Burselden.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. And now it's time to go back through the mists of time and the dusty old files for historical items from our paper. And we'll start with 25 Years Ago, read by Norma.
So this is 25 years ago, as stated, on March the 10th, 1995, and there are two items. A survey of health-endangering nitrogen dioxide levels in Winchester has identified the junction of St George's Street and Upper Brook Street as the city's danger spot. The level of pollution in the vicinity of the Daily Echo building reached a maximum of 143.75 parts of nitrogen dioxide to 1 billion parts of air. The EC safety limit is 104 ppb. Other test sites at Friars Gate, Upper Street, City Road and Chesil Street were monitored and found to be below the EC guideline. A rural survey of Longwood Dean near Ossulbury was also below the limit. Winchester's Environmental Health Officer, Les Feetham, told the Environmental Health Committee on Monday that recent research suggested that the exposure to nitrogen dioxide could increase the susceptibility to infections, irritating the lungs and causing bronchitis and pneumonia. Young children and asthmatics are assumed to be particularly sensitive, he said. The limited data available made it impossible to establish all the factors influencing nitrogen dioxide levels in the town centre. But weather conditions and traffic levels and congestion are certainly more important, said Mr. Feetham. And the second item. The mother of an 11-year-old choir girl has branded Winchester Cathedral's decision not to admit girls to the choir as sexist and possibly a breach of the law. Jocelyn Edmonstone of Christchurch Road, Winchester, said her daughter Emily tried to enter a cathedral voice trial in November, but was told by the dean, the Reverend Trevor Beeson, it would be impossible to let her join the choir. So Emily, who has been a member of the Hampshire County Children's Choir since 1992, started a petition against the dean's decision and wrote a letter of change to a Royal Mail competition to try and rally supporters for her cause. Her mother said, at the moment, a girls' choir from St Swithin's School sing at the cathedral once a month. I would like to see this opened up to girls from other schools in the area at least three times a week. In a letter to this month's Dyson magazine, The Winchester Way, Mrs. Edmondson said that she was told by the cathedral's master of music, David Hill, that girl choristers would eventually come from St. Swithin's School. She considered this an antithesis of Christian values, making the cathedral a place of worship for the rich and privileged.
Andrew's going to take us back 50 years now. Over to you, Andrew.
And as the hands of time slowly tick backwards, we go back to 50 years. March the 14th, 1970. Although Winchester is an important tourist centre, the city offers only three hotels with more than 20 bedrooms. An inspector from the Ministry of Housing and Local Government was told at a public inquiry in Winchester on Tuesday. The observation was made by Mr. R. G. Beecroft, appearing for Alpha Hotels Limited, in their appeal against the City Council's refusal of planning permission for an annex to the Winchester Hotel in St. Cross Road. The proposed annex comprises a kitchen, restaurant, 12-bedroom suites and toilets, and would increase hotel accommodation from 26 to 38 bedrooms. The lack of tourist accommodation was described by Mr. Beecroft as astonishing. Presumably, Winchester has an important part to play in the tourist industry in this county, he said. Answering residents' criticisms of the proposals, he said that car parking in the rear of the hotel would be screened from the Norman Court flats, and this would deaden any noise that might arise. And the second article, the former airfield site at Worthy Down, near Winchester, has this week been declared surplus to Ministry of Defence requirements and is to be offered for sale. It was just over 2 years ago that the MP for Winchester, Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, raised the question of the former airfield in the House of Commons. This week, Rear Admiral Giles has received a reply from Mr. Ivor Richard, Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State, which reads, in the late Jerry Reynolds review or reply of November 1967, he undertook to inform you when a decision on the use of this site had been reached. The whole site has now been declared surplus to defence requirements and will be disposed of in accordance with our usual procedures. If no official bids are forthcoming, the land will be offered for sale to the public.
Finally for this week, Nikki's going to take us back 100 years.
March 13th, 1920. A memorial tablet erected to the memory of men of the Congregation of Winchester Congregational Church who fell in the Great War was dedicated at a special service yesterday evening at the church. The congregation included the Mayor of Winchester and his son, and others included the families of those whose names were inscribed on the tablet. The tablet, which is of brass, inscribed in black lettering with red capitals, has been erected on the west wall of the church to the left of the pulpit. A great deal has been said and written lately about the A great deal has been said and written lately about the planet Mars. It has been reported that a suggestion has been made in the United States of America that a rocket should be constructed that would, when fired off, be a projectile possessed of such energy and impetus that it would reach our nearest neighbour, the planet Mars, and an individual has even volunteered to accompany this rocket as a passenger to its destination.
Note, let's go back to the present now, because we've got Chronicle comment, and it's read by Norma.
To panic or not to panic, it's our choice. To paraphrase a Second World War public information poster, your calmness, your common sense, your resolution will bring us victory. No one knows where the coronavirus crisis is going to end. The chances are that it will have been nipped in the bud with action taken before it has taken hold, as happened in China, Iran and Italy. But the important thing is that people in Hampshire do not panic. It's a cliche, but we really do need to keep calm and carry on. What are some people thinking? Panic buying toilet rolls? Yes, toilet roll. In bulk from Sainsbury's, Tesco's and Aldi. People in some places have been stealing hand wash from hospitals. It is the elderly and the infirm who will be affected by this panic. They are the poor people who will suffer. The rest of us should just slow down, think and carry on as normal. If this crisis has shown one thing, it's that we need to listen to the experts, people who know what they're talking about. Fortunately, we not hear about citizen epidemiologists giving us their opinions.
This week's first person was written by George Hayter, and Andrew's going to read it.
And I'm not sure whether this applies to me or it's just a grumpy old man, but it's headed, "It Puts You Off Inviting People," and it's by George Hayter. Years ago, when I was a student, I made a habit of being the last person to leave parties. Invited to lunch or a dinner party, I always seemed to be the last leaving them too. I remember a friend's party. I was still in his flat when the last of the other guests were leaving, and my friend was preparing for bed. His, understandably, annoyed girlfriend took my glass from me and told me to lie on the lounge floor and go to sleep. Now, I can see that people who outstay their welcome are a menace. Their embarrassing lack of consideration inconveniences people who have generously invited friends round. Most readers who entertain will recognise the problem. The existence of these minority stay-on individuals can disincentivise anyone thinking of throwing a party. Any lunch host looking forward to an afternoon snooze will be disappointed if guests stay stubbornly glued to their chairs. Hosts who have to get up for work next morning are robbed of a full night's sleep if laggard leavers keep them up. Exhausted dinner party hosts won't be able to relax with a late movie if tail-enders stay consuming the household wine rack. Is my impatience with overstayers antisocial? I have checked with a sociable acquaintance who entertains at home several times a week, and she feels the same way. A lot of people just don't know how to say goodbye, she reckons. It's a British problem, according to her. Germans, for example, will simply say goodbye, or more likely, Auf Wiedersehen, and leave, while we Brits feel guilt. We worry that our hosts will think we are slighting them by announcing our departure. We feel like deserters as we put on our coats. This consummate host tells me that British dinner guests seem to need an excuse, such as having a train to catch. She tells me that she finds it a bit hard to leave dinner parties sometimes, and once we said we had a train to catch, and we really did need to catch it, she said, but we still found ourselves going through a protracted goodbye that meant we ended up having to run to the station. British prolonged farewells include anything from inquiries about the health of relatives and other people not there to emphatic assurances that they and the host must meet again very soon, and they will definitely be in touch sooner than they have managed before. My experienced socialite contact has a theory. Everyone becomes aware at the same instant when it's time for guests to go. Yet they rarely do go then. She says this key moment is often a pause when the evening's buzz of conversation subsides into silence and doesn't immediately recover. Leaving too early must be possible, but I've never seen it done. It's better to risk leaving too late than to risk... Sorry, it's better to risk leaving too early than to risk leaving too late. Remember the showbiz adage, always leave them wanting more. To help me achieve a timely departure, I always wear a piece of equipment, a watch. Even before I arrive, I weigh up the occasion, my relationship with the hosts, and my understanding of their lifestyle to decide the appropriate latest time that I should leave. Otherwise, when you have feasted on your host's hospitality and you are being plied with your host's wine, it's easy to lose track of time or overlook subtle signals that your departure might not go amiss. What if you haven't received any goodbye vibe? What are you going to do tomorrow? Can clarify the host's wishes. If the response to that includes mention of the time they need to get up in the morning, I think that's a signal. If, what are you doing this afternoon, brings a long list of must-do tasks or go-alone or do-alone activities such as solitaire, that's a signal too. Whoops, if I'm not careful, I'll outstay my welcome again. Bye.
Let's have an alternative look at the news. Yes, it's time for Belgarum Diary. So over to you, Nikki.
Headed Mark Helps Club on a Superfan. A 50-year-old love affair with saints for a pensioner has been recognised thanks to a Winchester journalist. Mark Byford, former Deputy Director General of the BBC, has helped the football club honour Ken Rigney, who celebrated his 90th birthday today. Ken goes to every game and takes his seat in the Kingsland stand, as he has since the 1960s, when Ken Bates was the manager. Mark said he's been watching the Saints over seven different decades, and it's a story of outstanding commitment that began in an unusual way. Ken was born in Durban, South Africa, in March 1930, of mixed race, and as a young adult discovered the racial discrimination of the apartheid regime, so moved to England and settled in Southampton. His extraordinary life story was detailed in a book published in 2018 called Colourblind, Living a Life Full of Colour. Ken has seen the club's ups and downs from the era of Terry Payne, Mick Channon, Alan Shearer, Matt Letizier, Franny Benali, to the present day. Last year, when the club heard about Ken's book and his dream to visit the Staplewood Training Centre, he was invited to spend the morning there in recognition of his fantastic support. At the game against Newcastle United, Ken was presented with a special shirt signed by the first team squad, as well as the Saints-inspired birthday cake, recognising his loyalty and passion. Moreover, his story featured prominently in a fitting tribute on the matchday programme. A modest, self-effacing man, Ken always remains positive, loyal and committed, whatever the situation facing the Saints. Indeed, last October, when the team suffered the humiliating 9-love defeat at home against Leicester, Ken told his friends around him that night that it was now more than ever that the team needs your support. No fan has been more delighted than him to see the improvement in form in recent weeks. I always knew Rafe Hasenhüttl would do the trick and turn things around, he said. At half-time, Saints legend Hugh Fisher, from the 1976 FA Cup winning squad, presented Ken with a special Saints shirt signed by all the current first team members. Ken, a widower who lives in Southampton, was deeply emotional as the whole 30,000 crowd got up and gave him a rousing round of applause that lasted for minutes. And there are two photographs, one of Ken with his grandson Warren and his great-grandson Joey standing outside the statue of someone I ought to know who he is, but I don't. And then there's the Saints legend, Huey Fisher, from the 1976 squad, giving him his specially signed shirt. But it's the red shirt, or strip, I think it's called, isn't it? And it's literally written on it is Ken Rigney and the number 90.
And now this week's announcements. Open Sight, Hampshire's principal sight loss support organisation, has developed an innovative service in Winchester for local blind and partially sighted people. Our drop-in information hub offers visitors the opportunity of meeting with and talking to advisors on all matters related to sight loss and its impact on daily life. No appointment is needed to benefit from unbiased information, advice and guidance on services available to help those needed by poor vision to help make chores and tasks a little easier. Advice on aids, equipment, financial benefits and much more is freely provided without a formal appointment. The monthly Open Sight Information Hub in Winchester is open each third Monday of the month from 10 a.m. to 12. And that's at the Winchester Discovery Centre. For further details on other Open Sight services, call Open Sight on 023 8064. And now we've got What's On for Friday the 13th of March. There's a concert. Romsey Choral Society are performing their spring concert in the church at the Hospital of St Cross on Sunday the 22nd of March at 7:30 p.m. Tickets can be obtained in advance from www.romseychoral.org.uk or on the door. The concert will showcase a grand musical tour of Europe. In theatre, the Chesil Theatre hosts a modern performance of Dracula between the 28th of March and the 4th of April. The performances are at 7:45 with a matinee on Sunday the 29th of March at 2:30 p.m. If you want tickets, they can be obtained online at www.chesiltheatre.org.uk or you can telephone on 0333 666 3366. And the Theatre Royal has a musical performance of Beyond the Barricade on Sunday the 22nd of March at 7:30 p.m. The show features past principal performance from Les Miserables and they perform songs from the popular Broadway and Western musicals The Lion King, Hamilton, Blood Brothers, and of course, Les Miserables. Tickets from the theatre box office on 01962 840 440. Now, the lighting uptime ends on Friday the 13th of March at 6:22 a.m. and begins at 6:08 p.m. On Wednesday the 18th of March, it ends at 6:11 a.m. and begins at 6:16 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And of course, if you've got a problem with your player before returning it as faulty, please plug it into recharge and then try again. Continue with items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Norma.
Pensioners lose out on tax support. Hundreds of pensioners are losing out on helping to pay their council tax in Winchester, figures show. Charities warn that vulnerable households may be missing out on the vital support they're entitled to as members of the elderly people accessing support across England continues to plunge. Low-income households and pensioners in England can apply for a discount or exemption on their council tax under the Council Tax Reduction Scheme. In Winchester, 2,248 pensioners are claiming support in the 3 months to December, Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government figures show. That was a 15% drop compared to the same period in 2015, meaning that 410 fewer people were receiving the help. The scheme replaced the National Administered Council Tax Benefit in 2013, giving individual local authorities the power to decide who is eligible for support and what discounts to offer. But Turn to Us, a charity which helps people with financial hardships, say vulnerable households are struggling to navigate the increasingly complex and confusing system. Campaigns manager Varuk Kanish said, "Not since the poll tax have so many low-income households had to pay local taxes. The localisation of council tax support schemes has increased the complexity of an already confusing system, resulting in more people missing out. We urge the government to review this system and consider automatic entitlement for people who are struggling." He added that a move towards online services, driven in part by budget pressures, may be impacting older people. The government says it has protected pensioners and that they continue to receive the same level of support as under the previous system. However, there were 310,000 fewer pensioners claiming support in England last year than in 2015, a 17% drop. Out of the 317 local authorities, only one did not see a fall in pensioners' claimants. Caroline Abrahams from Age UK said it is important that anyone entitled to claim the benefit does so, as it can make a huge difference. She said, given that there are 2 million pensioners in poverty, it is worrying that the numbers claiming council tax support have fallen. For those already struggling to meet essential costs, the prospect of this year's council tax bills arriving soon will be one extra thing to worry about. A Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government spokesman said, "We're committed to levelling up across the country with councils in England and have access to £49.2 billion next year, the biggest annual real-term increase in spending power in a decade."
Overseas investor buys an iconic hotel. An iconic Hampshire hotel, which closed its doors after going into administration, has been bought by an international hotelier. The Botley Grange Hotel was put into administration in January, with its management blaming an article in the Chronicle's sister paper, the Daily Echo, highlighting a bad food hygiene rating on a slump in revenue. However, the 17th-century country house in Hedge End, which was on the market for £4 million, has now sold for an undisclosed sum. Administrators Leonard Curtis say the 55-bedroom property has been bought by an international hotelier, but they would not reveal their identity. The property is reported to have attracted a high level of interest, with the new buyer being an extremely experienced hotelier from overseas. Neil Bennett and Andrew Duncan, directors at Leonard Curtis Business Solutions Group, were appointed as joint administrators to the Botley Grange Limited in January. Just last year, the hotel's former owners, Botley Grange Hotel Limited, also went into administration. Despite a change in ownership, both companies have been headed by director Daniel James O'Doherty. When contacted by the Daily Echo, the hotel's finance director, Mia Gerber, previously declined to comment. Confirming the sale, joint administrator Neil Bennett said, "The property has attracted a high level of interest, as expected, and the buyer is an extremely experienced hotelier from overseas." Botley Grange is currently being surveyed to establish the necessary work required before the hotel can be opened. Before the sale was finalised, a number of parties expressed their interest in the property, recognising the potential to generate and grow revenue from a range of income streams such as accommodation, food and drink, conference and banqueting, leisure and spa breaks.
Pensioner, 88, died following fall at home. A Winchester woman died of hypothermia and pneumonia after falling at her city centre flat, an inquest heard. Madeline Joyce Dibben, 88, was found on the bedroom floor and was taken to hospital, but died soon afterwards. The hearing heard it was unclear if she was discovered by a friend or a cleaner at her flat, where she lived alone at Home Rise House, Hyde Street. But a report from South Central Ambulance Service said she was barely conscious when they attended on October the 14th last year. Miss Dibben, a retired college lecturer, died within half an hour of being admitted to the A&E department of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, said Dr. Charles Johnson in a report to the coroner. Dr. Daisy Baker, a GP at St. Clement's Surgery in Tanner Street, said she visited Miss Dibben at home after concerns from her brother Colin Dibben over her health, the taking of medication and the untidy state of her flat. The GP visited on October the 8th, a week before her death. In a report to the coroner, she said that Miss Dibben was mobile, independent, and was smiling, reactive, and appeared happy to see me. The flat was only a little untidy, she said. Dr. Baker raised concerns with her that she was not wearing a personal lifeline, which would summon help in difficulty. She said Miss Dibben said she was planning to downsize and demonstrated that she was still capable of looking after herself. A post-mortem by consultant pathologist, Dr. Hayley Burnley, said the cause of death was bronchopneumonia and hypothermia. There were no injuries from a fall. Acting area coroner Sam Marsh returned a verdict of death by natural causes. Her home was warm. There is no suggestion of self-neglect. She did not appear to be living in unsuitable conditions. The hypothermia is explained by the fall position where she fell and that she was likely to have been there a long time. And there is a photograph of a rather nice modern house, a Home Rise house in Hyde Street, Winchester.
Heritage is top priority. Civic chiefs say that preserving Winchester's historical assets is a top priority. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, has provided an update on the City Council's maintenance plans. She said the preservation of our historical assets is one of our top priorities. A detailed survey was undertaken at the end of last year for all of our scheduled ancient monuments, and from this a repairs strategy will be formulated. She added that the front of the tower of St Maurice's Covert has been cordoned off due to a recent report that small sections of mortar are falling from a high level. A structural survey has been carried out highlighting repairs required, which will be subject to a report to Cabinet in due course. Wider improvements to the covert, involving the resurfacing of the area adjacent to Market Lane, new street furniture and a drinking fountain are already underway with the remainder of the enhancement works planned for later this year. Weekly cleaning of the buttercross takes place and we are aware that fouling from pigeons is a regular issue, continued Councillor Learney at full council. The recent survey indicated some repair work is necessary and we are currently developing the best approach to take care of this important city centre landmark. Fouling from pigeons is also an issue at Hyde Abbey Gateway. Councillor Lerner said, we are currently reviewing options for improving the protection from pigeons. In addition, a broader scheme of improvement works is being developed in the form of a landscape scheme which will involve a redesign the public realm around the gateway by the designers who undertook the public realm works at the D-Day Museum in Southsea.
He ducks summer with the family, inspires a book. It was just like a little Disney story. Those are the words of Winchester author Juliet Deacock, who has written a children's book after learning a sweet tale told to her by a friend. In the summer of 2018, Juliet's friend, Shelley Hughes, and her family, who live in Itchen Stoke, took in a one-day-old sickly orphan duckling. Initially, the retired nurse decided to write a poem, but as it developed, it has now been turned into a book entitled Tatty Duck, A True Story. The book, written in verse, describes their wonderful summer and the funny times they shared until Tatty Duck settled back down on the River Itchen, Juliet said. It was so unusual that a duck would grow up in a house with a dog and become good friends. Juliet was shown photos by her friend, which captured the journey as the animal was nurtured back to health. They nurtured it until it was well and reared it in their house and garden with the help of their brown Labrador, Barney, she continued. When it was little, it used to cuddle up and nuzzle into the dog. It learned to swim in a washing-up bowl, then a bucket, and then finally a paddling pool. But the tale captured Juliet's imagination even further as the duck had an upturned beak, different from other ducks. The author hopes that this will inspire children into being proud of who you are and having confidence. The unusual beak has meant that the duck is easily spotted by the family. When it did grow up and flew down to the river, they, the Hughes family, could see which one it was. Everyone in Itchen Stoke knew. It was a really special thing. So far, Juliet has carried out two readings in Waterstones and spent time in Twyford Pre-Prep telling the story to children in the nursery and reception classes. The story will not end there, as she has been commissioned to write another book following the bird called Tatty Duck Grown Up. Tatty Duck, A True Story, is available to buy from Amazon, Waterstones, and Austin Macaulay, the publishers. And the story is accompanied by several photographs. So there's one of the duck, which is quite mature at this point, sitting on the edge of the paddling pool in which he finally learned to swim, and that's in their back garden. And then a very cute picture of the duck as a tiny, tiny duckling, and obviously very, very different and furry and soft. And then finally a picture of Juliet, holding up a copy of the book, Tatty Duck, A True Story, by Juliet. And there we go.
And this one headed Walking on Hot Coals for Trinity. Fearless fundraisers got hot under their feet as they took on a fire walk for the homeless. Over 50 people took part in Trinity's first fire walk, raising £11,000. Companies including Lane, Clark and Peacock, Capsticks, HCC, Fifes, Elemental, HJS and Hyphen Architect offered their support. Supporters took on the ultimate challenge of walking 15 feet across hot coals at a temperature of over 1,000 degrees. The event was hosted by UK Firewalk, a leading firewalking company, and the walkers were trained by Scott Bell, who is a 2-time Guinness World Record holder for the greatest distance walked on fire. Trinity Chief Executive Sue McKenna said, We are astounded by the amount raised from our first firewalking event. It was an exciting, new and highly visual way to raise funds to support our vital work, which will make a huge difference. And we have pictures of the various people doing it. What I can only describe their faces of ow or and arms held out and basically doing it, and one big picture of them all celebrating with the coal bed in front of them with the flames coming up from the sides. And then there's a picture of them preparing this bed of hot coals. And as a little addition to that, I have to say it's a Fijian custom. And when the Fijians do it, they drank a lot of a drink called kava with a K, not the Spanish one. So they're definitely more numbed than these people probably were.
Riverside Pub reopens after refurbishment. A popular pub on the River Test has opened its doors once again following a refurbishment. The Mayfly in Fullerton near Stockbridge has undergone a major transformation, which is hoped to lure in visitors to the eating and drinking spot. The bar has officially opened under the stewardship of manager Darren Fellows. As part of the refurbishment, the pub has received a full makeover with exposed brickwork and renovated outdoor seating area, along with two fireplaces, which boasts a country charm. Those seeking their own space can book the new Fisherman's Lodge dining area or conservatory for more intimate gatherings. Head chef Robert Pike has created a menu of seasonal signature dishes and British pub classics. Local ingredients are used, with some produce sourced less than an hour away from the pub at Outen's Butchers and Laverstock Park Farm, owned by a Formula One racing driver, Jody Schrecker. And there is a lovely picture of the Mayfly pub looking across the River Test to the pub. And yes, you can go and get your drink and eat there.
Joy is the incinerator plans are scrapped by an American firm. Plans to build a waste-to-energy incinerator near Barton Stacey has announced it will no longer proceed with the project. The US firm Wheelabrator was understood to have been facing increased pressures from campaigning groups and cancelled public meetings earlier this year. Wheelabrator had proposed building the facility, large enough to house Winchester Cathedral twice over, on land just north of the A303 near Barton Stacey. The plans were met with widespread opposition as campaigners branded the proposed facility a monstrosity and a blight on the Test Valley countryside. In a statement last Thursday, Wheelabrator confirmed it was pulling out of the scheme after conducting a strategic review of its opportunities. Commenting on the decision, Vice President Paul Green said, "The UK waste-to-energy market is extremely buoyant, with significant capacity gaps remaining in the residual waste management infrastructure. Wheelabrator is well placed to address this capacity gap and provide sustainable waste management solutions with a number of live projects across the UK." David Wright, chair of Keep Test Valley Beautiful, abbreviated to KTVB, has led the campaign to stop the incinerator from being built. And he said, "We are delighted and relieved that Wheelabrator have taken the decision to terminate their plans to build a waste-to-energy incinerator in the middle of the Test Valley. We have consistently argued that this is the wrong site for this project, and we are delighted that our concerns have been listened to and acted on, and that our campaign to stop this project has been successful." He then thanked the community's response from getting behind the campaign. And the article is accompanied by a couple of photographs. There's a computer-generated image of the proposed incinerator near Barton Stacey, with the word "scrapped" written right across it. And then there's another photograph of some of the protesters with their placards, binTheIncinerator.com, all connected together on the green.
Young carers visit Harry Potter set. 28 young carers, and their adult supervisors visited the Warner Brothers studios near Watford to take the Harry Potter studio tour. Travelling by coach, the group arrived in plenty of time to explore the wonders of filmmaking, the sets, the costumes, the props, and the special effects that were put together to make the Harry Potter films. Lunch was provided at the Backlot Cafe about halfway round the tour. This visit, funded by Winchester Rotary, has been 6 months in the planning and was initiated because Winchester Young Carers is one of Winchester Rotary President Mike Billington's chosen charities for the 2019-20 Rotary year. Ben Hogbin, manager of Winchester and District Young Carers, said, "The trip to Harry Potter Studios that was funded by Winchester Rotary was a fantastic opportunity for the young carers to be transported to a different world, one that I'm sure they will never forget. One young carer, aged 8, said he'd been looking forward to this trip for weeks and he was so excited he couldn't get to sleep the night before. It was thoroughly enjoyed by all and will be the talking point amongst the young people for a long time to come. And as the picture of them all gathered together in a large space with this enormous dragon in the ceiling above them."
Taking first steps to tackle climate crisis. As part of its response to the environmental crisis, Alsford Town Council decided to improve the way it manages its public spaces to encourage more wildlife. The council took its first steps in its response and reinstated a hedgerow at Albury Park. The 100-metre stretch, thought to have originally marked a field boundary, has been planted to provide a protective corridor for wildlife to travel across the open grass of the park. It would also become a habitat, encourage a range of birds and other wildlife, and of course to capture carbon. Councillor Andy Sprott, chair of the Recreation and Environmental Committee, said, "We wanted to involve the community and particularly the town's teenagers in the planting. Hopefully this will give them a sense of ownership of the park. Our plan was to have pupils from Perrins School plant the first section on the Friday afternoon and volunteers from the community the next day. The youngsters were so enthusiastic, we had to slow them down to leave something for the volunteers to do on Saturday. The hedgerow is a mix of hawthorn, spindle, field maple, wayfarer, hornbeam, guelder rose and crabapple, so will provide a range of flowers, berries and fruit, a colour throughout the year." Councillor Sprott added, "We laid an area of wildflower turf in the unloved corner of the park at the end of last summer. That has probably gone unnoticed so far as it hasn't flowered yet, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it alive with insects and colour in the spring. Residents will be able to hear more at the annual town assembly at the Recreation Centre in Albury Park on March the 17th at 7:30 p.m. And there's a picture of 7 volunteers. There was one youngster, but most of them of a mature age, and they are digging with their spades, ready to plant the trees.
Airport battles for survival. And this is accompanied by a photograph of some passengers making their way into Southampton Airport. "Southampton Airport is fighting for its future, and it will be significantly restructured after the collapse of Flybe. The airline firm fell into administration last week, putting more than 2,000 jobs at risk. The news had since improved for Southampton Airport, which had announced that Logan Air would be flying or would be taking over some of the Flybe routes. But Airport Managing Director Neil Garwood has now written to staff and explained that the future shape and structure of the company will be very different to what it is now. He said the collapse of Flybe and coronavirus have caused serious problems for the airport. The letter to staff says, "You don't need me to tell you that the world has changed completely for us following the sad demise of Flybe last week. Whilst we have some welcome news of backfill coming through, this will unfortunately not be sufficient to prevent significant restructuring across every organisation involved with the airport, including our own. Our priority is to keep the airport open, and we just cannot withstand such huge change without making changes in response. Our passenger numbers, including the backfill we have secured so far, are now around half what they were forecast to be for 2020. And crucially for our profitability, in the current market, airlines are in a position to pay us far less to operate than we've seen historically. It is so significant across the AGS group that our financial position is very threatened. The future shape and structure of our company will be very different to what it is now in order to ensure the airport survives. This comes after Flybe announced its administration in the early hours of March the 5th, which previously accounted for 95% of flights at the airport. However, despite the imminent restructure, airport bosses ensure that this does not in any way affect the runway extension plans. A spokesman said, "The plans continue unaffected and are progressing."
City Centre closed for works. A Winchester City Centre street near the cathedral is closed to allow for works to pavements by the County Council. Work started on footway improvements in St Swithin Street on Monday, February the 24th, and will last for 10 weeks. The works will be undertaken in two phases. Phase 1, Southgate Street to St Thomas Street, started on Monday, February the 24th, and is expected to take 7 to 8 weeks. St Swithin Street will be closed to through traffic between 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. each weekday and open at all other times. This will restrict access into the cathedral close. The road will be closed using signs and barriers, and Hampshire Highway staff will be located at either end of the closure to move barriers for access-only purposes. The workforce will also be able to advise pedestrians where it is safe to walk while the works are underway. Phase 2, St Thomas Street to Simmons Street, due to start Thursday, April the 9th, and take 2 to 3 weeks.
Winchester Hospital staff honoured at gala ceremony. Staff across Hampshire Hospitals, NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, were celebrated at the 7th Annual WOW Awards Gala Ceremony. From porters to physicians, Hampshire Hospital staff received over 300 nominations each month from patients, relatives and colleagues. Winners are announced throughout the year, surprising staff in their workplace, including the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Before the overall winners are announced, there is a gala event. Awards were handed out in 11 categories at the event, which was attended by the Mayor of Winchester, as well as representatives from the city's Rotary Club. Here is a full list of winners from Winchester area. The Chairman's Award was given to Jordan Melvin, Palliative Home Care Team Coordinator, Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Rotary Club of Winchester Award Team, Sterile Service Team, Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Rotary Club of Winchester Award Individual, Robert Hillier, General Maintenance Operative, Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The WOW Award, Roslyn Parker, Senior Physiotherapist, Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Family and Clinical Support Service Award, Transfusion Laboratory Team. And the Medical Services Award, Shawford Ward, Royal Hampshire County Hospital. And there are four pictures. The smallest one is of the front of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. There's staff celebrating the FT WOW Awards at the gala ceremony, where they're standing there, all ladies, holding their glasses of champagne. There is Stephen Erskine with Jordan Melvin, with her holding a plaque, and also it looks like a glass or perspex sort of award. I can't really see what it's meant to look like. I think it's just an oblong. And the main picture has the group of people with two shields and two awards and this square perspex one. Well done, them.
The the city council planners have rejected a pizza chain's signage. A pizza chain has been criticised for flouting planning rules and installing illuminated signs without planning permission. Papa John's had already erected two signs at its St. George's Street branch before it submitted an application to the City Council. The company opened earlier this year, and it had put up one illuminated fascia sign and an illuminated projecting sign. Planning officers refused the application, saying that the signage is within the conservation area and it, quote, does not use materials appropriate to the character of the conservation area. The refusal added, the additional hanging sign and opaque window film give the appearance of visual clutter and do not either preserve or enhance the character of the conservation area. The application sparked criticism from nearby shop owners. Tom Romita, who has owned Tom's Deli for 30 years, wrote to the council saying, "My customers do know that I'm here, but getting new people to come and eat at the restaurant can be hard, as lots of people don't know we are here. I have asked the landlord, WCC, many times about better signage, but they haven't been able to help." A customer of the shops, Alison Jowett, said, "Although I understand that this business needs to use signage to attract customers, the current signage is out of keeping in a conservation area. The other businesses in the same block have homogeneous signage, which provides a community feel, furnishing this area with a unique atmosphere. This new signage is illuminated and contrasts negatively with the other signage in the same area. Papa John's has 5 weeks to appeal the decision, or they may be forced to remove the sign."
Changes to worship amid virus concerns. Parishioners in the Diocese of Winchester could see their tradition of worship change due to the coronavirus. The Church of England's advisor on health issues, Dr. Brendan McCarthy, has issued advice to reduce transmission of the virus. The advice has been updated alongside a letter from the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin. Dr. McCarthy states, churches should already be following best hygiene practices that include advising parishioners with coughs and sneezes to refrain from handshaking during the peace and to receive communion in one kind only. At present, there is no government advice that suggests the use of the common cup should be suspended. The diocese is also advising that it is best practice for churches to have hand sanitizers available for parishioners to use. Priests presiding at the Eucharist, communion administrators and servers should also wash their hands, preferably with an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Intinction is not recommended, even by celebrants or communion administrators, as this represents an infection transmission route, as well as a risk to those with certain allergies. Dr. McCarthy continued, "Whilst in places of worship there is no need to avoid other worshippers who are well or to change normal faith practices, this includes taking wine from the communal chalice."
The Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition 2020. Alsford Butcher declared supreme county champion. A pair of Alsford butchers showed that they had the best bangers and were in the upper crust in return of an annual competition. C.E. Evans and some butchers and sole butchers walked away with prizes from the Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition 2020. The businesses took home the titles of Hot Pie Champion for its lamb, mint and rosemary pie and Speciality Pork Sausage Champion respectively. But there was even more joy for Soul Butchers as it was singled out by the judges as the very best entry across the whole competition to win the Supreme Champion 2020. The award, presented by Mike Wright, chairman of the Hampshire Fair, and commercial manager Tracy Nash, was for its pork, watercress and ale sausage, which was considered by the judges to be superb sausage, just excellent. Mark Soule of Soul Butchers commented on their success. "I'm very pleased to win it. It's taken me a long time. I've been trying to win Supreme Champion for the last 15 years. As a butcher, I specialise in sausages, and the winning sausage uses all local ingredients, including ale from the Itchen Valley Brewery and local watercress. This year, I entered 10 sausages and was awarded 10 golds. I am very pleased." Local butcher and producers gathered at the Holiday in Winchester on March the 5th for the much-anticipated results of the contest organised by Hampshire Fair. The awards evening is a major event in the county's food and drink calendar and was full to capacity. This year's competition had also attracted an impressive 254 entries, a 25% increase on last year. All entries were prepared under strict controlled conditions and judged by a panel of experts drawn from across the UK. Judging took place in February at Eastleigh College with the assistance of staff and students from the College Hospitality and Catering Department. Tracy Nash, Commercial Manager of Hampshire Fair, commented, "This competition is key in highlighting the talent and dedication of the hard-working butchers and producers in Hampshire. It's an opportunity for us to put local butchers centre stage and appreciate their skill and knowledge. I urge everyone to make it their mission to visit at least one of these award-winning butchers and try some of these excellent products." And there's a lovely picture of very happy-looking old gentlemen, I seem to notice, holding up their certificates of their excellent sausages and pies.
That sounds like a call to arms for female sausage makers, if yes. You ask me, but never mind. A booklet marks a milestone for the town's minibus service. A trust which has been helping those in need of support in Alresford is celebrating the 50th anniversary of its minibus service with a booklet retelling its history. The new Alresford Town Trust was given permission by the Charity Commission to take over a minibus, a converted Ford van, and was agreed by trustees on August the 14th, 1970. And since then, it has been running the service for the benefit of the elderly and disabled residents of the town. Pam Stevens and Robin Atkins have written a 15-page booklet setting out the history of the service. Pam said, "The booklet was my idea, and the 50-year history sets out the importance of the minibus to the local community and shows the vast number of volunteers that has made it happen. It's a good read for anyone interested in how the minibus was started and developed over this period. Other organisations have rung me to find out how the Trust has achieved this." As part of the booklet, the pair have delved into the history of those who made the minibus possible right from the very beginning. One of those was Geoffrey Searle, a trustee from 1944 to his death in 1979, and he was the brainchild behind this venture. Geoffrey not only raised donations, but also put in some of his own money to purchase the initial vehicle. And it was kept in the family, with daughter Anne Hanson following in her father's footsteps. Since its launch, the Town Trust has had various organisers and ran a total of 8 minibuses, including a Ford and a Mercedes. The booklet has been partly sponsored by 5 organisations, namely Richard Steele Funerals, Alresford Rotary, Old Alresford Parish Council, Andrew Smith Auctions, and McCarty and Stone. The booklet costs £1.50, and proceeds will be donated to the Minibus Fund. To buy the booklet, call Pam Stevens on 01962 734 861. Celebrations will be in full swing on Sunday, July the 19th, and the Trust will celebrate its 50th anniversary of the minibus with a celebration on the Avenue, where Trustee Pam will have 2 minibuses, plus various stalls and a WY cafe bar. And the article is accompanied by a series of photographs There's an artist's impression of what the first bus would have looked like, which is an old Ford. There's the new minibus and a picture of some of the members there and a young kiddie all standing by this very yellow new minibus operated by Alresford Town Trust. This photo was taken back in April 2017. And then finally you've got another picture there, which is black and white, celebrating the minibus at Atkins Court in 1987.
Concerns over medics' uptake of flu vaccination. More than 1,500 doctors, nurses and other frontline staff at Hampshire Hospitals Trust have not had a flu jab to protect themselves and their patients, new figures reveal. The Society for Acute Medicine says it is concerning that many NHS staff who deal with patients have not been vaccinated. Public Health England statistics show that 1,747 of the 6,546 frontline workers at the Trust were not vaccinated against flu by the end of January. It means an uptake rate of 73.3%, just above the national average of 72.4%. Doctors, nurses, clinical staff and support workers involved in direct patient care are encouraged to have the jab. Trusts have financial incentives for staff uptake, receiving full payment if at least 80% have it, and a decreasing amount down to 60% coverage, below which they get nothing. The target is measured between September and February, and the payment varies depending on the size of the trust's contract. The proportion of staff who had the vaccine by the end of January differed widely across 231 trusts that submitted figures. Julie Dawes, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospitals, NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We are committed to ensuring that as many staff as possible receive the flu vaccination, protecting themselves, their patients, their colleagues and their families against the virus. Receiving the vaccination is a personal choice, but we strongly encourage all of our staff to do so, focusing on those who come into direct contact with patients. Our current vaccination rate for this group of staff is above the national average, and we expect it to reach 77% by the end of the campaign. We run a flu vaccination campaign throughout the autumn and winter, holding drop-in clinics in hospital restaurants, visiting staff in their areas of work, and promoting the vaccination through internal channels and social media. Clinical areas with high uptake rates have also been entered into the draw to win baskets of healthy treats." Across England, the 72.4% uptake rate at the end of January was better than at the same point a year earlier, when it stood at 68.6%. Dr. Dog Brown, chief executive of the British Society for Immunology, said, "The flu vaccine is the best protection we have against a virus that can lead to serious illness in vulnerable groups." He added, "It's important to continue to promote uptake of the seasonal flu vaccine among frontline healthcare workers to reduce the risk of spreading the virus and causing serious illness in at-risk groups."
Big Sleep Out set to return. Trinity Winchester is again hosting its Big Sleep Out to raise money for their work with vulnerable people. The annual event is on Friday, May the 15th, in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral. The evening consists of fundraising, entertainment, building cardboard shelters and enjoying food from local vendors. But from 10 p.m, the challenge is to get some sleep away from the home comforts. Every penny raised in sponsorship will go to Trinity's services, offering support to get people out of homelessness and ready to move into independent living and into employment. The 8th Winchester Big Sleep Out is being sponsored by Fife's. Sam Power from Fife said, "We are delighted to be able to support the Big Sleep Out this year. It's a fantastic initiative. Well done to Trinity Winchester and all those taking part." Sue McKenna, chief executive of Trinity Winchester, said, "This is our biggest event of the year, bringing in people from all over the city for this unique night. Sleep Out is not an experience of homelessness, as we will all return to a warm shower and a home the following morning, but it's an eye-opening way to raise money and awareness for our services. Last year, over £42,000 was put back into providing long-term support for the vulnerable people. Please sign up to help us raise this again. The maximum number of participants is 400, with spaces filling up quickly. For more information, call 01962 828636. That's 01962 828636.
And finally, a challenge to all you budding poets out there. An annual poetry competition celebrating the best in new writing for 2020 has been launched. The Winchester Poetry Prize is organised by the Winchester Poetry Festival and is open to poets from around the world. This year's entries will be judged by Andrew Macmillan, whose first collection, Physical, was the only poetry collection to ever win the Guardian First Book Award and was the poet in residence at Basingstoke Discovery Centre in 2012. He is also a senior lecturer in the Manchester Writing School. The winner will be announced at the Winchester Poetry Festival, which takes place from October the 8th to the 12th. The first prize is £1,000, second prize is £500, and the third is £250. The competition is for original, unpublished poems of up to 40 lines on any subject and in any form or style. The closing day for your entries is July the 31st, 2020.
Extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, standing in for Keith Vincent, it's Roy Faithful saying goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label on the outside. Thank you.